Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 129. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we're here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Sure are.
I feel like, other than slight football update, the Lions lost.
The Lions lost. They're out. In epically awful fashion, I feel like. We shot ourselves in the foot.
Our poor defense
was just obliterated.
Like, I couldn't be mad at the Commanders because they played a good game.
They did.
Yeah.
And Goff had a couple of flubs. It wasn't even, like, bad play on his part. It was just a couple of flub moments where things did not go where he was supposed to, where he wanted them to go.
Yeah.
And the defense just could not do anything. It didn't help that one of our most important, like, defensive players went out in the third play of the game. So it was like, I knew our defense is just decimated.
Yeah. They did the best they could.
As much as I wanted them so badly to go on the Super Bowl run this year, with 22 injuries on your IR, there's just no way. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I'm recovered. It's okay.
Now I'm rooting next year. I'm rooting for the Bills.
Yeah. I mean, aren't we all? Basically anybody other than Kansas City. I don't hate Kansas City. Well, like, I don't hate Kansas City, but I want them to lose.
Yeah.
Like, nobody needs to be winning 3 Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. Plus, Josh Allen's really good.
Yeah.
And Hailee Steinfeld is his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Fiance. And she's pretty cool. So
yeah.
I have no problem cheering for the Bills at this point. Plus, with us, they kind of have the same, like, Super Bowl drought thing that we do. Like, they've been better for more years than we have. We're just sort of starting our, hey, we don't suck, period of time.
Yeah.
They've been better for about 2-3 more years, but, like, we're kind of in the same spot. Like, our franchise has not been good for a very long time, and now we're back. So,
yeah
I have no problem cheering for them.
On the flip side of that, Ohio State did win the national championship.
Which is why the Lions lost. When my brother's teams both make it to finals or playoffs, they both can't win in the same year. So Ohio State won the national championship, which explains why the Lions lost. It's Steven's fault. I blame him every time.
I was blaming Kevin because he actually was rooting for the Lions for my sake. And I was like, clearly the universe did not like you going back on your however many decade hatred for the Lions. So, but that's the power of love. He was, you know, rooting for the Lions regardless.
Yeah. Alex stayed home because he didn't want to mess with vibes.
Mm.
He's like, you know, I understand. He does not. He enjoyed not watching football.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Other than that, I feel like I'm just keeping my head down, and January is going better than December and November have been going. So I feel like I'm getting my feet under me and everything, and
I have substituted reading books for the time I used to spend on TikTok. Honestly, the TikTok ban, whatever that was,
the
blip in time.
Yeah.
I prepared myself for it to be gone, and I said, I'm going to use that 2 hours a day that I spend flipping through videos reading. And I think I've made it through, like, 4 books in the last...
Wow.
Like, 4 e-books in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That I never...
You've been, like, struggling to, like, read for a little while.
For a long while, it feels like. Like, if I get really into a book, I can go, and, like, I will read it quick. But then it takes me a while to want to get into another new book, and, I've been kind of going through this one series, and I'm just thoroughly enjoying myself. And so, yeah, I've read, like, 3 or 4 books in, like, the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
That's awesome.
And I'm a firm believer. So I'm like,
I started cutting down on TikTok a lot because I don't allow myself to open it in the mornings because then my attention span is shot for the rest of the day. And I try not to get sucked into it because I will just sit there and, like, doom scroll. And especially now with, like, the political climate the way it is, like, I just, you know, feel inundated by a lot of that stuff. And I just want to look at cute animals, you know?
Agreed. Yeah. So basically, I've got a couple of, like, there's a girl who rescued a cat that she found in her shed that she has now rescued, like, 5 cats.
Mm.
And it's a whole thing. I follow her, like, love following her stuff. There's a cat named Waffles who it gets mad at her dog and her human and the other human that lives with her.
The spare human.
The spare human.
Yeah.
I love watching Waffles get mad. It's adorable. So, like, yeah, that is what I need in my life.
Yeah.
I need cute kittens and angry kittens. and, like, that is all I want TikTok for at
yeah.
this point. So, I maybe do, like, 10, 20 minutes a day down from literally, like, an hour, 2 hours
yeah.
without even thinking. I would go, like, I usually, like, I tuck my husband in. I, like, scratch his back before he goes to bed every night. So I, like, go, I scratch his back, you know, help him get set for bed or whatever. And then I'm usually up for another hour and a half or so. I used to go sit on the couch and watch TikTok. And time would just fly by. And then all of a sudden it's 1 a.m. and I'm like, I was going to do stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to play Dreamlight Valley. I was going to read a book. I was going to do the dishes and do laundry and fold towels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I would just literally sit on TikTok. So I'm honestly really glad to kind of have an excuse to set it aside a little more. And yeah, so maybe I do like 10 minutes a day now.
Yeah.
Like, just very briefly check in on my faves and get the heck out of there.
I've cut down on social media a lot, and honestly, it has helped my mental health so much. So, you know,
agreed.
If you're looking for a sign from the universe, maybe this is it.
You are allowed to just not imbibe everything.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, maybe we're helping with your mental health and all that kind of stuff, too. We're usually pretty chill around here, pretty positive. If you would like to get into contact with us, you can do so at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We're trying to check those as regularly as we can, and you can drop us a line about pretty much anything you want, and we'll get back to you, you know, within 1 to 14 business days.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, as far as news goes this week, there's not anything. We do have a couple of little random things that we wanted to talk about. While I was searching for news, hoping something had come out for us to talk about, I did find a cool reel from the premiere last year. Maybe everyone saw this but me, which is totally possible, but this, I think it's like a influencer on, it's a reel, so it's from Instagram or Facebook, did this video showing, like, all the little games and stuff that they had set up at the premiere. They made their own necklace. So, like, all the bowls with all the different colored beads, like, she got to, like, make a necklace. They showed all the blue foods and, like, there's an ice sculpture. I don't know. I feel like I hadn't seen all of the stuff that was going on, so I thought this was really cool. I will make sure it gets linked in the show notes so you guys can check it out. Just a random video from back then that I hadn't really noticed before, and I thought it was fun. Little reminder that a year ago at this time we were taking in season one.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
We were finishing season one. I mean, like, I think we had maybe two episodes to go at this point.
Yeah. It's, you know, I don't really want to admit this out loud, but I haven't rewatched it at all. And I really want to, but there's just something so sacred about, like, that first watch that I think I'm still, like, hanging on to it, but we had talked a while ago about, like, rewatching it and, like, doing kind of a, I mean, we kind of did a little bit of a season overview right after it aired, but it would be cool, maybe before the second season comes out, to rewatch the first and, like,
maybe sometime this summer.
Yeah, see if our feelings have changed and, you know, that kind of stuff. Which, I mean, I don't think they would change in a bad way, but
yeah, I'd be down for that. I have not watched the entire thing again. I think I've watched, like, two or three of the first couple episodes with the husband.
Mm.
He has not finished it yet.
Oh,
we got
okay.
distracted and we started watching 17 other things. But we still need to finish it because he'll mention it every so often. Like, we haven't finished that yet. Like, we need to get back to that. So, yeah, I've watched a couple of them twice, but not all of them. So.
Yeah. Throwback to when we were talking about the things we have been watching.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the Girls Gone Wild documentary.
Yes.
I did end up watching it. It was very good.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot. And, like, I don't know if you guys have caught this, but I'm not really an angry person. Like, I don't get mad. I was, like, sitting up straight yelling at the TV about this. Like, my heart was pounding. I was furious about some of the things that were said, some of the things that happened. I mean, if you can handle that,
yeah,
and all the misogyny and all the grossness, it was a very interesting,
like,
documentary.
Everything that possibly could have gone Joe Francis's way went his way. And that is the only reason that he is living in a random house in Mexico, mm-hmm, as opposed to being in prison.
Mm-hmm.
It is insane how much went wrong for the prosecution and for everything else over the course of the entire investigation. And it's like 4 or 5 different charges. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't like just one case. It was like 3 or 4 different cases throughout his life that he just managed to slip by because of one little thing that got done wrong, or somebody forgot to do this, and he, yeah, it is, it's infuriating,
mm-hmm,
it's absolutely infuriating, but it's good to be aware of.
Yeah,
I
agree.
And having been alive for the generation where at 2 a.m, flipping through channels, you'd see Girls Gone Wild infomercials,
yeah,
all the time, it was like, oh yeah, like, that was definitely a thing, like,
mm-hmm,
yeah, it was kind of fascinating to see everything that kind of happened behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, next up on our happy hit parade, Karen has something to talk to us about with Dreamslinger, which,
yes,
is Gracie Kim's new book.
Yes, this is the book that she, like, not like she told us exclusively, it was going to come out weird, but she told us when she was on the podcast,
yes,
like, this idea that she had that was, like, still kind of stewing. So we've kind of been invested since the beginning. And the idea of these kids who go into this, like, you know, where do we go when we sleep? Like, that was the question that she kept asking herself. We were like, oh my gosh, that sounds so good. So we've been, if you guys remember, have been on this for a long time. So Dreamslinger is coming out in April of this year, which is super exciting. If you're as excited as we are, just know that, you know, the cover has been revealed. It's absolutely beautiful. We do have a synopsis. And it says, 14-year-old Aria Loveridge lives at the Rest Haven Home for Dream Slingers, a safe haven for children born with a genetic mutation that transports them to a magical realm while they sleep. When the Kingdom of Royal Hanguk, home of the Dream Slinger League, announces the first Slinger Trials, where teenagers from around the world are invited to compete for a chance to join the league, Aria knows what she must do: join the trials and take down the league from the inside. After all, they're the ones who killed her mom. But first, she'll need to survive the trials. This sounds like such a cool, like, amalgamation of things. I know that she was talking about it's a little bit X-Men, it's a little bit Pokemon, and, like, those two things put together just make me really excited, and I love dreams. I have weird, crazy dreams, and this is something that I think I've always been super interested in. Now, she does have this little promotion going on right now where basically you can go sign up for some free swag. So if you go to her website, graciekim.com, and scroll down a little bit to this one section that says join the Dream Slinger League today and get the first 6 chapters and all these goodies for free. All you have to do is sign up and you will receive this Royal Mail through the good old postal service and digitally, which will include a printed 6-chapter sampler of the book, Dreamslinger, a signed book plate sticker, a bookmark, 2 maps, League insignia sticker, a Dream Panion Palace Guide, that's Dream Companion, a Dream Panion Collector Cards, sheet music for Aria's lullaby, and the password for the members-only section of the website, which up at the top of her website, there's a little button that says League. You'll get a password after you sign up, put the password in, and you can basically get all of the digital stuff on there, like, immediately. And basically, this is available until the materials run out. And I was like, oh, well, I know she's been doing this for a little while. Like, let's see. I'm just going to try to sign up. It let me sign up. So, like, the U.S., because there are different ones depending on where...
Makes sense.
Yeah, where it's getting mailed to.
Yeah.
So the form for you, the U.S. one, is still open as of Sunday, January 26th. So if you want that stuff, I would highly recommend signing up. Her stuff is always really cool, and she's always got, like, really amazing artwork. I've gotten some stickers for the other books a few times, and, like, they're really cool.
And you can see the graphic when you look at, the, like, the sign-up on her website. You can see the graphic with, like, the bookmark and, like, some of the map and, like, all that. So, yeah, everything looks really well done. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're into Gracie's books, or if you really want to read this one, or you think this one's cool, it'd be a fun thing to sign up for. Plus, free stuff is, it's always fun.
Yeah.
It's always good.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Random aside, I mean, not that random, but what is your favorite season?
I'm a summer girl.
Okay, that's what I thought. So, your dream panion is based on essentially, like, your favorite season. It determines which, like, school you go to. And so I believe you would be the solar phoenix. You would have a solar phoenix.
Oh, thank you.
And I would have a harvest tiger because I like fall.
I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. The other ones are a bloom dragon for spring and a frost turtle for winter.
I mean, that all sounds cute.
They're all very solid.
They all sound amazing.
Yeah. So you basically, I think, get to pick and, like, kind of come up with your own version of those creatures.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's really exciting, and there's a book trailer for the book now. You can pre-order it, which is, like, a huge deal. If I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to pre-order this book because that really helps authors, and we want Gracie to be able to write the rest of these books because they sound fantastic, and I haven't read a single word from it yet.
Just a little random PSA, because Karen pointed it out. Pre-orders are one of the things you can do to help authors more than anything. When a publishing house or whatever, if they see that there are pre-orders for a book, if it is in demand, that is, like, leaps and bounds really great for an author. So, yeah, if you're ever, like, debating whether to pre-order something or not, if it's an author you really respect or enjoy their stuff, just do it, because it's going to end up helping a lot in the long run. Little random PSA. Okay, and then last but never least on our news today, Karen wants to talk a little bit about that Percy Jackson cookbook we mentioned last time.
Yes, because my friends and I, my friends who live out of state, we weren't super concerned about getting each other's Christmas presents on time because we had, like, other people that were going to be much more, like, demanding in terms of, like, oh, my mom's coming to visit me. I need to have her Christmas presents ready.
Right, yeah.
So we kind of traded a little bit late, and they were like, your wish list is, you know, mostly has been bought. What else do you want? And I was like, Percy Jackson cookbook. I was just talking about how I was going to buy it. Might as well ask for it for Christmas. So I have it in my hands. It is absolutely beautiful. No
regrets.
It is
really cool. Yeah.
10 out of 10. Would recommend. I did not realize, and I don't think you've realized this yet either.
Probably not.
This book was written by a man, but it was written by Grover. Grover is the one that puts this book together.
Aww.
Because in the introduction,
okay,
it says, hello, heroes and heroes in the making. If you know anything about me, you know that I love eating. My very favorite things to consume are aluminum cans and bean and cheese enchiladas. But a satyr, especially an aspiring searcher, cannot live on cans and enchiladas alone. Believe me, I've tried, and it wasn't pretty. And so he goes on to basically say, like, you know, he's picked up a ton of recipes on his journeys, and he thought it was fun to collect them and put them in this book. And every once in a while, there's a little note written in the side from Annabeth. So I thought that was really cute, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, I mean, the pictures are stunning. The recipes are really good. I basically flipped through, like, every single page just looking at everything. They all sound amazing and just a lot of really good mixture of things. So I would highly recommend it. I also wanted to point out, let me see if I can flip to the page, because I remember you pointed this out before. Okay, on page 45, here we go. The peanut butter and banana ketchup sandwich.
Yeah.
Is not what it sounds like.
Okay.
So, banana ketchup is something from the Philippines. And
okay.
It's not actually, like, what it sounds like.
It's not like tomato ketchup and bananas.
Right. And I was like, gross.
Yeah.
I don't like bananas, mm-hmm. but also that combination does not
sound appealing. Yeah. No, not to me either.
So he describes it as basically a sweet, sour, salty combo of vinegar, sugar, and soy sauce. So I could see that pairing not too bad with peanut butter.
Yeah.
So I'm much more likely, yeah. I think, to try this out. And we learned something new. It's right. a fairly common condiment from the Philippines. So
yeah, I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
That sounds, yeah, it definitely sounds better than ketchup and bananas. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But I can understand that they just call it like banana ketchup. But it's
yeah.
not ketchup like we think.
Right. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, I mean, the guy who wrote this, you know, he's written other books like this before. And this is from Insight Editions, who does, they do a ton of the fandom based cookbooks. And their stuff is always really good. So yeah, if you're still thinking about it, again, this is your sign. Go pick it up.
It's also just a really fun random gift. If yeah. you have a Percy Jackson fan in your life and they own all the books and they don't need another t-shirt and, you know, you can't buy them more stickers because they've covered all of their, you know, notebooks, whatever, in stickers. Yeah, it's one of those random gifts that you don't necessarily think about, but it's like, this is fun. And then
and when it's practical.
Well, I was gonna say, and then when the book, when the next season comes out and you want to make something for the show, like to kind of celebrate the show, or you're having people over, you can go to your Percy Jackson cookbook and pull out some blue recipes and be yeah. like, boom, here we go. So yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. All right, well, that brings us to our main discussion today, which is Chalice of the Gods, chapters 28 and 29. We are climbing closer to the end of this book. We hit basically the climax in the last two chapters, and now things are kind of falling into place a little bit more. And I thought these two chapters were pretty solid. I think the first one was a little bit, they're both a little bit, okay, we just need to get Percy where he needs to go. But we did learn some interesting things, and, you know, there were some really good moments in these, so I did really enjoy them. So let's just kick it off with Chalice of the Gods, chapter 28. It starts raining toys. And this begins with, you know, right after Percy hugs Gary and tells him, I love you, bro. Gary is shocked. He immediately freezes on the spot. He is so surprised that Percy would embrace him. He can't even remember the last time he had a hug. And I thought, you know, that was really, it's such a, like we were talking about last week, such a clever twist on how to defeat Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And this also brings up some memories for Percy. And he kind of contemplates what Sally's parents would have been like if they were still alive, because they died when she was very young. She's actually older than her parents were when they died, and that kind of blows Percy's mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it is really interesting to think about those sort of things. I never met one of my grandfathers because he died right when my parents first started dating. I think it was even, like, before they were officially dating. They were just, like, talking a lot on the phone and stuff, and so I never got to meet him, and it is just very curious to kind of be like, what would he have been like? What, you know, how would he have liked me and, you
right,
know, those
yeah.
sort of things.
Yeah, my dad's mom passed when he was, like, young, like, 5 or something from, like, a brain tumor or something. So, like, yeah, it's one of those things where one of my grandparents I never got to meet. I met my step-grandma later and, you know, when my grandpa got remarried, like, I remember her, but I don't actually know my dad's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Like, you think back and you're like, whoa, like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, there's a whole person who was kind of instrumental in my dad being my dad, and I never got to meet that person. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of this book, but especially these chapters, they're about this idea of growing old and how we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should actually be very thankful for it and for the life that we've gotten to lead, because some people don't get a long life. And Gary, you know, is very confused about why Percy decided to hug him, and he wants to know the reason. And Percy says he'll be wrestling with Gary and old age his whole life, and he's okay with that. And Gary is kind of like, you know, not many people feel that way. He's kind of flattered, I think, in a little way. And he agrees that Percy's too young to die now. And, you know, he's still kind of a cantankerous old man about it, but I like that he sees it from that perspective and doesn't necessarily want to grind Percy's bones into grave dust.
Yeah.
So Gary basically, I don't know that he really admits defeat, and Percy doesn't get him to bend at the knee. Like,
no.
He doesn't get him to his knee to hit the ground, but he very much hands over the chalice, which is basically saying, okay, you beat me. And before he does that, he confirms that Percy wouldn't drink from the chalice if he had the chance. And Percy says, yeah, no interest in doing that.
I said no once before, I'm saying no now.
Yeah.
Immortality does not appeal to me. The idea of being a person and leading life and being mortal is way more fascinating to me than the other. Which, mm-hmm. it's you know, it's a unique position when you're talking about being tempted with immortality. Like,
yeah.
Most people are like, oh. Percy's like, eh, I've seen what that does to people.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
I also think it's really interesting. I don't know that we necessarily touched on this aspect of it yet, but at Camp Half-Blood, a lot of the demigods, you know, they kind of know once they understand this world that they're living in that there's a very good chance they're not going to live for a long time. And so a lot of what they do, especially in those early books, it's all about glory. It's all about making a name for yourself. And Percy had the chance to do that. To become immortal means your name is immortal. It means everybody's going to know who you are. And he's already a pretty famous demigod, but mm-hmm. you can always, you know, go up a step farther. And I think that's really amazing that he's just not interested in that, despite the fact that idea was kind of pounded into him from the very beginning, whether it was, you know, from some of the gods and the stuff that he was surrounded with, or just the other demigods and what history is made of demigods. But for him to continuously turn that down, despite kind of his upbringing in this world, I think is pretty cool
mm-hmm.
and unique.
Agreed.
And, you know, this attitude Percy has gave Gary hope that not everyone is like the gods. Not everyone wants to be immortal, you know, is afraid of old age and all that kind of stuff. And so I think Gary's pretty thankful right before he disappears in a puff of talcum powder, because of course he does.
Of course.
After that, Annabeth and Grover come over to congratulate Percy. And they don't get very long to kind of celebrate their win before a hula hoop falls from the sky. And the hoop, you know, this would feel kind of random, except the hoop is a symbol of Ganymede's eternal youth.
Because of course it is.
Yeah. I love how Percy was like, yeah, that doesn't make it a whole lot creepier. Like, you know,
yeah.
this child's toy and
right,
like the
yeah.
reason why Ganymede was stolen away and... I just like that Rick isn't, you know,
yeah.
avoiding how
right.
creepy Zeus is.
This is a
like,
little weird.
Yeah.
No.
Annabeth then notices that the hoop actually contains a message from Ganymede. Zeus is having his mother over for a family brunch, which means he needs the chalice now. So this chapter was actually pretty short, and it
yeah.
was pretty much like, okay... Gary just wants to know why Percy did what he did. He gives him the chalice. Ganymede immediately asks for the chalice back because they are now on even more of a severe time crunch than they were before. But it was good that it, like, moved things along. Like, now we immediately have another step in the quest that we have
yeah.
to get to. What was your favorite line?
Because I can't turn down a good Percy Annabeth moment, especially because he calls her wise girl in the paragraph, like, preceding this line. So right after Percy tells Gary that he loves him and, like, embraces him, and Gary, like, is patting him on the back and starting to cry, and Percy's looking over his shoulder at Annabeth and Grover and kind of, like, taking stock of their reaction to him giving Gary a hug. And Percy says, he looks at Annabeth and says, "And that twinkle of appreciation in her eyes was the best look I could ever hope for. It meant she was proud of me." Mm. And it's just one of those seaweed brain wise girl moments, you know? Like, it's one of those special things where Grover's just standing there like, "What are you doing? You're hugging him. Okay." Meanwhile, Annabeth has already gone through what Percy's doing and has already figured out what his thought process was, and she's really proud that he came up with this on his own and outsmarted Gary and, you know, outsmarted old age just by giving thought to why are people always running from old age? Like, you know, people are always avoiding it. This is not the best way to fight old age. It's to embrace the time you have. And yeah, so I just really love Annabeth's reaction to that. It was so cute.
Imagine how good it must feel to look over and know Annabeth is proud of you. Like, that's right? Gonna be the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Mine was kind of a funny one. Right after the hula hoop falls from the sky, Percy goes, "Even in a weird morning, this seemed weird." And it's like, yeah. And if your already weird morning is getting weirder, like, I guess that's just a normal day in the life of a demigod. But if they think something's weird, then you know it's weird.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What was your favorite moment?
I liked Gary kind of double checking with Percy and asking him, like, "Would you drink from the chalice?" Like, he's holding it and he's about to hand it over and it's like, "Tell me again why you wouldn't do this." And Percy, you know, lays it flat out and says, "No, I'm interested in a long life with Annabeth, and I can picture us living old and gray together and all the adventures we'll have." And yeah, and I really loved that Percy got another chance to, like, prove to Gary, like, "No, I have no interest in immortality right now or ever, because I like what I've got." And seeing Gary kind of feel that again, that, like, not everyone is just trying to avoid getting old all the time. Like, I'm sure it's refreshing for Gary, because literally everyone in the world is trying to avoid getting old. Uh-huh. And here's a demigod who says, "Nope, I'd be really glad to get old. I'd be really glad to see, you know, my hair turn gray." So, yeah, I just love the little cap to Gary's story.
Yeah, I do too. I think that's really awesome. I think Gary as a character is just really interesting because he is super cantankerous. He is very dangerous, like a lot of gods are. But you find that one thing that makes him stop and go, "Oh, Percy Jackson, you're different, aren't you?"
Yeah.
I think that is really cool. And my favorite moment was Gary being shocked but appreciative of Percy's hug, because nobody had really done that. Like, he literally could not remember the last time he was hugged.
Right, and that just hurts.
I know.
Like, poor Gary.
I love that Percy still kind of goes into extreme detail about, like, how gross Gary is, yeah. But at the same time is sort of like, "I just ignored these things," and kind of thought of him as the person that he is and what he represents, and it's not all bad.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. Yeah.
It's, like, kind of gaunt and scary looking, and his face is kind of rotting.
And he's still wearing that loincloth.
Super really, really old, but he needed a hug, and so I did it.
Yeah,
I agree.
And it's awesome that Gary could at least appreciate that and not immediately want to smite him on the spot.
Right, yes.
Now, chapter 29, I teeter on the precipice of Mount Brunch, I thought was a little bit meatier of a book, I think, or of a chapter. I think it gave us a little bit more information, even while it kind of pushed Percy again toward that final meeting with Ganymede and whoever else ends up, you know, finding out about what happened.
Yes.
My initial very first question after reading the first, I think, like, he dedicates three paragraphs to it, is how do we feel about Percy's hatred of Brunch?
One of the lines in there, it took me a minute to, like, put it all together, but, like, he's talking about it being an abomination, and he says, "I don't eat food with a name that translates as Mr. Crunchy," and I was like, wait, Croque Monsieur, like, I know Monsieur is Mister, but I didn't realize Croque was crunchy. I always thought it was, like, something to do, because, like, Croque Monsieur is, like, a crunchy bread with, like, cheese and stuff on top, like, egg and cheese, and,
okay.
I've had one. I've had Croque Madame. Most people have probably heard of Croque Madame more than Monsieur, but I was like, I've had one of those before, and it's good. It's very breakfasty, but, like, I wouldn't have called it Mr. Crunchy.
Yeah.
And so that made me laugh. But, yes, I don't understand why brunch... I personally adore brunch. I love breakfast food, so getting any opportunity to eat breakfast food at other times of the day is a thumbs up for me. I'm less picky about brunch than I am any other meal. Like, I love breakfast food, so if I can eat it, I don't have as many issues. Like, I don't like mushrooms, and I don't like mayonnaise, and I don't like mustard that much, and I don't, you know. So I'm constantly having to take stuff off of menus. Like, you know, oh, I want that sandwich, but can I get it without this?
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast, it's almost always like, can I just have that? So I don't understand Percy's hatred, but it is interesting that he has decided it is, like, the worst invention since, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I'm team brunch because I like eating lunch more than I like eating breakfast.
Okay.
And when you go to brunch, you get the best of both worlds. If I don't want to eat breakfast, I can just eat lunch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while I, in theory, kind of agree with Percy that brunch is, like, a very weird kind of phenomenon, because we don't really do that with, like, any other meals, like, kind of mix and match like that, I don't really like breakfast food that much. I mean, I don't mind it sometimes, especially, like, sweeter things, like being able to eat pastries for breakfast or, like, pancakes with fruit on it. Like, I do love those things. But if you sit me down at brunch, I'm going to look at the lunch menu. I'm not going to look at the breakfast menu.
And you have now officially seen one of the ways in which Karen and I are complete opposite.
Yes.
Like, literally, if I could avoid having to order lunch anywhere ever in my life, I would be a happy camper. Because, like, dinner, I can find things, I can deal with it. But, like, the idea of being able to just order breakfast food till, like, 3 in the afternoon makes my life so much easier. And it's just, yeah, it's just one of those things. Plus, I am not a sweet breakfast person.
Mm.
I am a salty breakfast person. Mm. I like savory things, eggs and bacon and all that jazz.
Bacon is the one exclusion. I will eat bacon literally any time.
In the morning, in the evening, it's the bagel bites, whatever that song is. No, but, like, yeah, I have never been a huge sweets in the morning person. I can eat a donut occasionally or, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been a sweet breakfast person. I like my savory. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's just one of the ways in which
we're both team brunch, but for complete opposite reasons.
Yeah.
Sorry,
that's just it. Brunch lets you have what you want.
Yeah. Also, and I wanted to know, does Rick feel this way about brunch?
Right? I'm curious.
Like, is this just Rick talking?
Do we need to just rename it to Elevensies and leave it at that? Like, that's what the Hobbits call it. And it's basically like second breakfast or whatever.
Yeah.
We can just call it that. If brunch is that offensive, like, I'm good with it.
I mean, the other reason Percy might not like brunch is because he's very curious what the gods have for brunch. And he mentions poached demigod on toast with demigod tier mimosas. I made a little note in here. I don't think these are in the cookbook, so in case you go looking for them, they're not in there. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't like brunch either if I was on the menu.
Yeah, no. Wouldn't be fond of it either if that were the case.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he dedicates more than one paragraph to hating on brunch before they kind of get to the point where, like, okay, Percy must hand-deliver the chalice to Ganymede instead of sending it Hermes Express, because of course he does.
Yeah, I was a big fan of this little mention. Like, why can't he just, like, send it? Like, you need it immediately? I will get it to you. Congrats. Have a nice day. No, of course he has to deliver it. Like, it can't just be that easy. Like, mm-hmm. It's never that easy.
It's never that easy. Grover and Percy head to the Empire State Building while Annabeth heads to class because she's a good, smart little cookie. And apparently Percy is less worried about missing class. Then again, he is the one who has to go hand over the chalice, so...
And he's gonna miss that quiz, but...
Yeah. Annabeth reluctantly lends him her invisibility cap. And this is like a whole thing, which I'll get to in a second, but Grover is the one this time who kind of has this plan. He knows what needs to be done. He tells Percy that Naomi, a cloud nymph who's dating Marin, can get them into that brunch as long as they go to the side entrance of the palace kitchen where she works. Grover describes cloud nymphs as school secretaries because they know everyone and everything. And I love that because if they're up in the clouds, they can see everything, they can hear everything. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Marin, if you remember, is on the Council of Cloven Elders. He's not as bad as Linnaeus, who is the one that we were always like, why does he hate Grover so much? Like, it's just, it's weird.
Right.
Marin did vote to exile Grover in the Battle of the Labyrinth, not believing that he had actually spoken to Pan. So I think somewhere along the way, maybe they've, you know, now that Grover's on the council, like, they're friendlier than they were before. And I thought this was really interesting. Marin is actually also the one who defended Will Solace and his mother against attacking Stymphalian birds. He was the one that brought him to Camp Half-Blood.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Marin. I guess, you know, we can hate you for wanting to exile Grover, and love you for giving us Will Solace.
Exactly.
Also of note, Satyr-er is apparently a satyr dating app.
Like, it's so ridiculous. Satyr-er?
Yeah, I feel like there's gotta be, well... Alright, my immediate thought on a better name was something like Horny, which is probably not what we want to name it, especially the children's book, but I feel like there's gotta be a better name than Satyr-er.
Yeah, you would think, right?
Horny is kind of funny, though.
It that's hilarious, honestly. Yeah,
I do like
something about hooves.
Behooved.
That's a cute name.
That's a good one, actually.
That's cute.
All right, that's my vote. If you guys come up with any other ones, let us know. Now I kind of want to put a little graphic together for, like, Valentine's Day. That would be so cute.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so back to the invisibility hat. When Percy puts on the hat, he looks down and he sees a smoky outline of his body, and it feels like he has termites crawling over his skin. And this appears to be the first time Percy has ever used the hat, because he did not know that's what it would feel like.
Yeah.
I just thought that was really interesting, that at this point in the... I mean, chronologically, this is still, like, halfway through his story, but, like, in terms of when Rick started writing these books, very interesting for him to have put it on for the first time here.
Yeah. The other thing about the hat, as he's, you know, he's asked Annabeth for it, has not yet put it on, they talk about kind of the rules of the hat in this chapter a little bit. And, like, they say that, like, the gods can see through it, but the minor, like, nymphs and minor gods can't. And I'm going back in my mind to the story, and I'm like, didn't Annabeth use it to hide from, like, major gods before? Like, I'm trying to remember the, you know, all the times we've seen her use it, and I feel like I can't name one instance off the top of my head, but I feel like there have been many opportunities where she's used it to hide from, like, pretty major gods.
I'm trying to remember, I want to say maybe she tried to use it on Hades and it didn't work.
Okay.
Which would make sense, because with his helm, like, his helm is supposedly the only one that can hide you from a major god.
Yeah.
I don't remember any other instances off the top of my head. I want to say that she did get caught, but I don't know if I'm thinking of Hades or something else. There's something very vague in my memory.
Well, because the other possibility in my head is we're always reading these books from Percy's point of view. So when Annabeth puts it on, she disappears.
Mm-hmm.
The gods may always see her and just don't say anything because they don't care. And whether or not she's supposed to be invisible, it doesn't matter to them. And she's actually using it to sneak up on someone else, but the major god's just there and doesn't give two hoots about the girl with the hat on. So, like, that is also something that kind of occurred to me, is, like, maybe she has worn it around major gods, but, like, they could see her, they just never brought it up.
I also liked that Grover mentions that the minor gods and the nymphs and stuff, like, if you wave your arms around and are acting crazy, like, they may still be able to see you. It more likely kind of makes you look unimportant, and, like, they'll just kind of pass over you unless you draw attention, which is kind of a good counter to the fact that you can be invisible, is the fact that, like, okay, well, you can't just do anything you want. You still gotta be quiet. You still gotta, you know, be stealthy.
Discreet.
Yeah, exactly. So they arrive at the Empire State Building, and Grover is there to distract the security guard while Percy sneaks onto the elevator. I thought it was really interesting how Percy described the lobby of the Empire State Building. He says it's gloomy and oppressive. It kind of reminds him of the Titan stronghold. And he says, you know, Zeus probably did that on purpose to make Olympus look even better. See how much prettier we are? We must be the good guys. And again, I just love, like, Rick doesn't miss an opportunity to throw in there and remind us, like, Zeus might be, you know, king of the gods and all powerful and, like, this huge figure in Greek mythology, but he's done a lot of crappy things. A lot of the gods have. And, you know, he could have easily have Disney-fied the gods, and he's never really done that, which I love.
Like, he's given them some silly things that they do and think and react with whatever. They are definitely middle-grade versions of the gods, but they're not Disney-fied. They're not good guys all the time. We're just, I'm just Papa, I'm Dad. Like, it's fine. Yeah. No, they're powerful beings that do not always do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
They do the selfish thing more often than not.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally agree with you there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I wanted a hint at what the security guard was reading, because I always like looking for that and trying to figure out, like, what it was. But we didn't get anything, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because Grover hula hoops and plays the panpipes at the same time, because apparently satyrs are amazing hula hoopers.
Yeah.
Love that for them. And he provides a pretty good distraction for Percy to get on the elevator. And now Percy is on his own. Annabeth's at school. Grover's getting chased out of the Empire State Building. Percy, it's up to him now to make sure that Ganymede gets the chalice on time. Percy does get up to Mount Olympus, and it feels like the chalice is pulling him forward. Like, the chalice is kind of gravitating toward the feast that's about to go down, brunch. And I really loved this line. I almost picked this, but I had to include it anyway. He says, "I hoped I wasn't going to have a Frodo moment where I got to the threshold of Mount Brunch with my magic item and then, instead of handing it over, became visible, yelled, 'Haha, the cup is mine,' and drank the immortality-flavored Kool-Aid." So funny.
I mean, I enjoy a good Mount Doom Frodo reference as much as anybody, so yes, I thoroughly enjoyed this as well.
And the follow-up line, too, was also fantastic. "Zeus would probably make me the minor god of canapes. Annabeth would be so mad." I just love that his first thought is Annabeth would be mad.
Right? Like, if I'm going to be a minor god, like, I'd have to be a minor god of something cool, not canapes. Ooh, she'd be so pissed.
Yeah. And this is the end of the chapter. Was it just me, or did this just, like, cut off?
Yeah, it
immediately.
Did. It did. It was very... Yeah.
I know I've read this book before, but I was so mad. Like, I just wanted to keep reading.
Yeah.
Like, just give me the next chapter.
Yeah. One, it doesn't help. Okay, I read the ebook.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't help that it, like, ended at the bottom of a page, so it looked like a full page of text. And when you went to the next page, it's like, oh, that's the chapter.
That's actually exactly what happened in the physical book, too. Because I read the physical one, and I, like, flipped the page to keep reading, and I saw the next chapter title, and I was like, am I missing a page? Right. Like, really?
Like, really? That's where we're ending this, huh? Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it's good that even though we kind of, you know, Percy just defeated Gary, it could be kind of, you know, slowing down at this point, but no, like, we still gotta do the thing. We still have to get the cup to Ganymede in time, so it's still very exciting, still makes you want to read.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your favorite line in this chapter?
Mine was kind of near at the beginning of the chapter, where Percy's talking about how, of course, he can't just use Hermes Express, he has to deliver it, and he says, I was familiar with the rules of quest completion, which included white glove delivery by the demigod in charge. Yeah. And I was like, yep, that's pretty much what, yeah, yeah. That's exactly what it is.
I love that, like, Rick's just acknowledging, too, like, yes, this could be done maybe in an easier way, but that's not how this works.
Right?
We gotta make it difficult.
It is your responsibility to make sure it gets there, and you have to deliver it. You can't just send it there and be like, oh, you never received that package? My bad. Like, you can't.
Because, you know, Hermes would probably pull that too.
Right?
You can't. He's a trickster god.
You can't pull an Amazon and be like, oops.
Yeah.
We'll just refund. No, you can't refund my money. It's the chalice of the gods. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
My favorite line was, I wasn't sure how Grover knew this much about Annabeth's hat, but since he was telling me bad news, I figured he was probably right on target. Again, that's just how this works. Like,
yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. It's gotta be true.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
What was your favorite moment?
The phrase, Grover shakes his wool maker. He's doing his little dance with the pan flute in the Empire State Building. And the fact that Rick chose to use the phrase, Grover shakes his wool maker, just, I died. I'm sitting there thinking about Grover, like, shaking his little furry booty.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. It just...
I think he does a little satyr dance after Percy defeats Garrus, too. And, like, that also made me very happy. Like, what does his little satyr dance look like?
I now desperately want Rick to put someone calling it his shaking his wool maker yeah. in the show. Like, I need Aryan doing some little dance.
That would be so funny.
And, like, for someone to be like, shake that wool maker. Like, I need to hear this.
They could totally do that when he's in the wedding dress.
Right? Like, that's
what
I'm saying.
Perfect.
There's gotta be an instance where we can use this because, yeah it's gold. It's absolute gold.
This was a very Grover-centric chapter, even though he doesn't go up to Mount Olympus with Percy, because my favorite moment was the fact that Grover was the one with the plan this time. He's the one who knew Naomi. He knew what needed to be done, how he could sneak Percy up into Mount Olympus. He had to be the one to cause the distraction. And I just think it was, you know, Grover doesn't always get his time to shine in these books, but when he does, I think that Rick is really intentional with it, and it's always really awesome. And especially in this book, I feel like Grover did get a lot of time to be himself and to be mature and helpful and a leader and all of that. So that was really awesome to see.
I also like that this kind of also it infers that when Annabeth is, like, gone, that Grover sees, like, the opportunity to, like, step in and step up. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously Percy could come up with something, but he knew Annabeth had to go to class. They were right by her school. And so it was going to be Grover and Percy going up to deliver this thing. And so Grover kind of steps up and is like, I've got a plan. Because, of course, Percy will come up with something if he has to, but it's kind of nice that Grover sees the gap and that Annabeth has stepped away to let them handle this. And Grover's like, okay, I can do this. I can handle this. I've got a plan. Let's do it. So I just like that there's that in him too. Like, he wants to be a part of the team. It's not just he's along for the ride. Like,
right. He's not just the sidekick or, you know, a third character. Like, he actually does have purpose and intention.
Absolutely. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for content in either of those places. We did have a comment on Instagram this week. Karen posted a story about Roshni Chokshi teaching
a class? What was that?
Kind of like one of those like master classes on writing to like help you figure out how to write. Like, I think it was specifically like a fantasy kind of thing, like what she's really good at.
Yeah. And Maria Steinmetz commented and said, I'm signed up for this class. Super, super excited for it. She's one of my favorite authors. I would, like, that's really awesome. Like,
yeah.
I feel like learning from someone like Roshni is gold. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you know, learning from Rick or, you know, she has such a way of, like, crafting her worlds, and she's done it in so many different iterations now. She's done YA, she's done middle grade, she's done some adult stuff now, she started writing adult books too, so, like, she has a really good understanding of, like, fantasy writing in general.
Yeah.
So I feel like she's a treasure trove of just details and information. That,
her writing is always so poetic to me, and it's so rich and colorful and vibrant. And she pulls on threads that I think wouldn't necessarily be somebody's go-to. Like, she has very unique ways of describing things and looking at things. And so if you're able to take the class, check it out. And Maria, I hope, you know, when you go through this class, if you want to tell us how it was, I would be super interested in learning about that, because this just sounds fantastic. She's also one of my favorite authors. She's just somebody whose words I trust so much that if she's going to put out a book, like, I'm going to give it a try.
Absolutely. Yeah, we would love to hear how the class goes, if there's something really cool that you learned from her, or, you know, absolutely. Keep us up to date. Feel free. We'd love to hear from you. So, yeah, that was really cool. And that pretty much wraps up feedback for this week. Next time, we will be talking about Chalice of the Gods, Chapter 30 and 31. I know we're getting close to the end. Are those the last two?
No, I think we get up to 35.
35, okay.
So we've got a couple more.
Yeah, so we've got a couple more weeks of this book still. So, yeah, next week, Chapters 30 and 31. And until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.